What is a credit union? It's a cooperative, like a food co-op or a housing co-op, but the members share money. Credit unions offer the same services you'll find in a bank, but they're different from banks. First, credit unions are owned by their members, and credit unions are not for profit. Any money the credit union makes goes right back to the members in the form of low fees and good rates. To learn more, you can go to STCU's blog at stcumoney.org.
Welcome to Let's Talk Spokane, where host Ryan McNeese seeks out and discusses the latest on a variety of hot local topics. Now, here's your host, Ryan McNeese.
Welcome to Let's Talk Spokane. I'm Ryan McNeese, and I'm here with Paul Schneider, board member of Spokane Public Schools and also AP history teacher at University High School. Thank you, Paul, for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Ryan, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I know from the outside looking in, you are quite a teacher in the history realm. I know you're yourself very fascinated with history. What areas of history really got you motivated to be in the classroom?
Well, it's interesting. I actually had history teachers that motivated me first, and so I come by it pretty honestly that way. But in terms of my studies, I did my master's work in constitutional studies, and so the U.S. Constitution and the formation of the constitutional period is really where I love most. However, it's all fun.
Well, that's probably, since constitutional studies are your real passion, that's probably why I think we recently saw that you had, I think they were doing a Hamilton rap in one of your classrooms, which I'm sure that brought the kids to attention and really motivated those kids.
Yeah, the Hamilton musical has been a real inspiration for a lot of my students, including our own kids,
yours and
mine.
Yep.
And it's been a fun way for me to kind of bring alive that period and some of the characters in that period, and a fun way to teach content.
Well, I think it is a way that if you can really get the kids to engage, they have a reason to really dig in and learn more and more. I give you kudos for that. Let's talk about the McCleary case. Obviously, that from a legal standpoint, from an education standpoint, that really has been a hallmark case here at the Washington Supreme Court. Why don't you start in a little bit and tell us what you're thinking about that case, and then we'll go back and forth a little bit.
Sure. I don't pretend to be an expert on the entirety of the case. However, there are a number of really critical and key issues. For the listeners who don't know McCleary, the Supreme Court has found that the state legislature has not been doing its primary duty, which is to adequately fund basic education, and has pushed the legislature to try to figure out a way to do so. We've figured out some of the funding structures for materials and things like that, but there are a number of looming funding issues that are yet to be determined, specifically teacher salary and compensation at the top of that list. And so right now the legislature is under a contempt order from the state Supreme Court to fully fund basic education, but we're still struggling with how we're going to make that happen.
And obviously a lot of controversy over this case.
Yes.
I mean, there's folks on both sides of the aisle. I think as an attorney, I think as you read through this case, and it is a very dense case, there's a lot of complexity, a lot of issues throughout the state and throughout the country, really, and educational challenges. I think one thing that would hit any listener that's listening today is the issues, the definitional issues of what's at stake. What is basic education?
That's a great question, and I honestly don't have an answer for that because nobody has defined it as yet. How far does it basic education extend? How many different kinds of programs can we use as definition in that? Do our special needs kids and the programs that we use to support their really important educational needs, do those fall under basic ed?
Right.
How about extracurricular programs like drama, the arts, sports even? Where do those fall in basic educational frameworks?
Well, and Paul, I think you're right. I mean, my question obviously being rhetorical, what is education, basic education? And education in the case, I'm reading right from it, under Article 9, Section 1 means the basic knowledge and skills needed to compete in today's economy and meaningfully participate in the state's democracy. Wow.
Could you, little bit of room for interpretation there, I would say.
Yeah, and so it's so obvious that you can see the challenge not only for the court, but obviously for the legislature to figure out what is basic education. And And has that changed substantially? This case and some of the preceding cases that have led up to it, Seattle School District number 1 v. State, we're talking about a 30-year transition of trying to figure out how do we best fund basic education and what does basic education mean to most folks? What are you seeing out there within the education field as to how this can be done, how the legislature can potentially wrap their hands around this?
It's going to be a heavy lift. There's no doubt about that. I do know that the issue of teacher compensation is going to be among the most challenging, but also the teacher shortage that we're facing is going to be another issue. So I think some of the big pieces are how do we create equity across a state where you have such inequity in terms of socioeconomic levels, equity of opportunity for employment, especially in rural communities and small towns where they have a harder time recruiting teachers and also retaining teachers. And so figuring out a system is going to be a challenge in that regard because a one-size-fits-all model is going to potentially challenge all
of us. One point I think you just made, which is a very good one, is the socioeconomic inequity. If a lot of the funding is coming from real estate taxes and the prices of the respective real estate in that community may be substantially lower in one particular area versus another, and that inequity is fairly visible.
Correct. And, you know, do you create a situation where a Seattle teacher is going to make the same as a teacher from perhaps Squim? And I'm not sure that's going to work out real well, especially when property tax revenue so dramatically supports Seattle teachers differently. And so, you know, what is that going to look like? The other piece is if we take away the funding from local levy and property taxes, does that gut so many other programs? Because not only are salaries in part paid by that, but lots of the things that we do in schools are. And so it's a real challenge. And I don't envy the legislature's position right now. It's going to be a hard
lift. Well, and absolutely right, Paul. They have been charged from the Supreme Court that, okay, it's in your hands. Supreme Court says we're going to oversee this and keep jurisdiction. However, legislature, go figure out how you're going to do this. A very, very complicated issue. Am I correct on my statistics here? In the case, I believe it says during the 2006-2007 school year, state funding made up approximately 72% of the total revenues to school districts.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
That is substantial. And I think goes to the points that you're referencing, that when that type of funding makes up all of the programs, You got some real tough decisions to make on do we cut this program when a certain amount of people really want that program, and then vice versa on the other side, somebody else feels equally passionate about other programs that should not be
cut. And then, you know, what about programs that are designed to prepare kids for 21st century? You know, the last major case, as you said, was 30 years ago. And so the education and the needs of the community are very different than they would have been. So those are going to be really challenging definitions to work out.
Well, when you think basic education to ready these individuals for a productive part of our democracy, and you indicated, you know, what should we or shouldn't we have in the classroom? If you went back, 2 years ago, you wouldn't have had the virtual reality technology that you have today. So if you had during this particular case and when this litigation was going forward, some of those conversations would be vastly different than they would be here in 2016.
Yeah. And absolutely. Moving forward on this is going to be another challenge regarding technology. Do technology needs in a 21st century classroom constitute basic ed? If so, how do we keep up with that? How do you continually refresh and enlarge opportunities and access to kids for technological purposes?
And I think if any of us are being fair, I'm not sure how I'd answer that question. I know my personal opinion would be the future of education and to be a vital part of our community, technology clearly is something you cannot take away from that equation. I would say at this point, it's becoming more and more a basic part of our education. However, when that definition was put out, it certainly wasn't.
Certainly wasn't.
Let's come back and chat a little bit more right after a short break. I want to talk a little bit more about McCleary and also your current role on the Spokane Public School Board.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
You're listening to SpokaneTalksOnline.com, Spokane and North Idaho's business and community talk station.
A special thank you to our friends at Tom Sawyer Country Coffee, the official coffee supplier here at Spokane Talks Online.
This is Sammy Eubanks. Coming soon to SpokaneTalksOnline.com, the Motorsports Hour.
If you know what amortization, bridge loans, and HELOCs are, well, you're pretty smart. The financial world is brimming with acronyms and other confusing terms, which can make it harder to make decisions about spending, saving, and borrowing money. If you could use an introduction, go to STCU's financial education blog at stcumoney.org. You'll find out whether you've been amortizing all along, and the experts at the credit union will translate some of the other important financial concepts, too.
Welcome back. This is Let's Talk Spokane. I'm Ryan McNeese, and I'm here with Paul Schneider, board member of Spokane Public School Board and also AP history teacher at University High School. Thank you, Paul. And right before the break, we were chatting about the complexity and the difficulty of the McCleary case and how that affects public school funding. I think one of the biggest things we were discussing is, from a definition standpoint, what constitutes basic education? Is this a conversation that you're seeing when you're sitting with your colleagues on the Spokane Public Board? Is that what folks are talking about right now?
Yeah.
How do those conversations
really
go?
And, what is basic ed is a big piece of this. And then how do we get to that really challenging questions of funding? Where will the sources come from? If the use of levy dollars are going to be used for what they're supposed to be used
right.
for, that does not include compensation for employees. And so
right.
how do we deal with that if that goes away?
And Paul, I think that's a good point. I think our listeners and certainly folks in Spokane County as a whole and further out than that are well aware of experiencing the levies and the bonds that really are part of our environment, our voting environment, on a regular basis. However, I think what you're describing is those levies are being misinterpreted, that's what's supposed to fund teacher salaries and oftentimes equipment and or textbooks, things needed in the classroom. And I think that's what you're talking about, that's being misinterpreted in the community, that constitutionally basic education, as we've been talking about, and of course the complexity of that definition, basic education is to be funded by the state, however, maybe relying too much on these levies.
Correct. And we're in some places up to 30% of their budget is relying on these levies. And so if you take that, how do you fill that hole?
Right.
Is a really difficult question. And the other piece to this, and I do know that educators around the state are very cognizant of this, is if we begin to take money to fully fund education, where do we take that money from? We
right.
don't want to see, for example, decreased mental health services across the state. That doesn't do our students and our communities and our families any good either. And so
it's all intertwined.
It's all very much
right.
intertwined.
That's a good point.
And so it's going to be an impactful discussion across every aspect
yep.
of the state.
And again, a good point, Paul, that folks that are certainly for the full funding of public education are not for necessarily the decreasing of these other highly needed organizations or the funding of, as you said, mental health, one of our larger problems in our communities. And then that obviously gets entwined with the schools as well. I thought an interesting part of the language from the court in McCleary was that a school cannot guarantee an outcome, but rather can guarantee an opportunity. And I think that's an important distinction because from a legal standpoint, it makes a lot of logical sense that if the Supreme Court was saying, legislature, you need to figure out a way that in all of these public schools, this is going to be the outcome, a specific test score, a specific benchmark for one child attaining one level versus another. That really just isn't even logical. However, can we guarantee an opportunity? And really, I think that's what McCleary is based on. Not the outcome necessarily, because that just would be illogical, but the opportunity.
Correct, yeah.
What else do you see as the challenges as this order has come down and has become kind of the talk of the Supreme Court, quite frankly, from an education standpoint. Where do we go now? How does the legislature figure out how to make this a practical transition?
Well, I mean, first of all, and I know that school board members around the state would, I think, concur with this, we need support on this heavy lift from both sides of the political aisle. We need to have Republicans and Democrats come together to find pragmatic solutions to this. We also need to figure out what role the public sector unions play in this. Mm-hmm. The teachers union, the WEA, is a very important member in this discussion. And so how do we take on and deal with the challenges associated with compensation, healthcare, and benefits across a huge segment of state employees, while at the same time honoring collective bargaining rights that are in place, but also working with legislators who have very different ideas about the best way to do that funding. So I think the next this next session in the legislature is going to be a real critical one. The funding task force has just released its report on funding for compensation, and I think they've got some really interesting data to start working with.
Well, I think what you've done a very good job of here is really flesh out the complexity of this issue. It is not a single focused issue to just say, let's do this and then this happens. Very complex, a lot of different organizations, a lot of different effects to that. It'll be interesting to see where this plays out and how the legislature, as you said, can come together, both sides of the aisle, and really focus on what really is the critical feature here, which is the education of the kids in Washington State. Let's transition a little bit to something a little bit lighter, but not necessarily. But in your position as a board member of the Spokane Public Schools, what are you looking at right now that's exciting? What are you looking at right now that you're excited about that the schools in our area are doing?
Well, there's a number of things, to be honest with you. We are lucky in this entire region to have great schools and great systems. I'm especially proud of both where I teach as a professional, but also where I serve on the board. Spokane schools are doing some really cutting edge and innovative work with kids. I'm impressed with the options that we have for students. We've got top-notch neighborhood schools, but we also have got some really interesting option schools for kids, Montessori,
right.
The Apple program, the community school being among them. And so we really are trying to provide families with as many entry points and appropriate points for their kids to find a successful avenue through education. And so I'm really excited about that. We're also growing, which is a great problem to have.
Yeah, you know,
it provides us with a certain set of challenges, especially in certain segments of our district. But to have people want to be here and to be excited about the schools and the opportunities that we're affording their kids is just a really neat thing.
Well, you're correct. A good problem to have. Obviously, people are coming to this area probably identifying just what you stated, which is we have some great resources, great schools, and families, of course, real estate-wise, are always, that's the first question they ask, is how is this school associated with where this real estate is that I'm looking at? Exciting times, and I actually think you're also correct that we're spoiled in our area that we have such good schools that perspective-wise, if any of us were to go out into other communities in different states, whether throughout the country, I think we really would see we have something special here. But that does require a lot of time throughout Central Valley School District, throughout Spokane Public Schools as well. How much time you as an elected board member, and that term is how many years?
In Spokane, it's a six-year term.
Six-year term. Very time-consuming endeavor. Obviously, appreciate someone like yourself that's willing to dedicate that much time because, as we said, you have a day job all day long as an AP history teacher as well in the Central Valley School District.
Correct.
Because you have an opportunity to work within Central Valley, but also work obviously on the Spokane Public School Board, what is the size difference between those two districts?
Spokane is a little over twice the size of Central Valley. So it's Spokane is the second largest system in the state. We serve about 30,000 kids. And so it's a sizable community.
Wow.
So Central Valley is about 12,000 kids.
Is the first King County of some sort? Okay.
Yeah. Seattle Public Schools, and then we're neck and neck with Tacoma.
Okay. And but, then West Valley, East Valley.
They would be considered smaller districts. Central Valley is about a mid-range district. And West and East Valley would be on the smaller end of kind of medium.
Right.
But we have school districts up at the borders in the northern parts of the state that are teeny tiny.
Interesting.
So we serve all kinds of kids in the state.
What are topics that come to mind in your recent meetings regarding technology? What are the hot topics today that come up?
Well, you know, we are talking about this at both my board position and also in my teaching position is how much access do we allow people in our schools to various parts of the internet and things like that. We're constantly dealing with questions of connectivity. Do we have enough to support the kinds of connectivity we want throughout our schools? There's really exciting work happening as well. Mm-hmm. And so it's fun to watch and see teachers and buildings adopt technological solutions to the challenges that they face. And so those are all really exciting things. In my own classroom, I've started to, and I've been teaching for a long time, but I've started to use Chromebook technology in my classroom, and my students, I think, are benefiting from the use of some of those innovative ideas.
Well, I appreciate hearing that, and I think you're absolutely right. There it is a double-edged sword in that when you talk about connectivity and access to the internet, obviously there can be things on the internet that you're not wanting the students to participate in. However, obviously the other end of that is there is such a plethora of resources out there that really can take our students to levels that prior generations didn't even have the opportunity to see or engage with.
Correct.
I would simply deem that visual learning, where I think during our era, there was a lot of teacher stands up front and tells you about this, tells you about that, whether it be American history, whether it be or U.S. history versus European history. And now in your classroom, you're literally able to take your 25 kids a tour of the particular castle of European history. That's a different game.
Correct. And there's also so many tools out there that are allowing students to collaborate and work really well with one another. And if we're talking about 21st century skills, those are huge.
Absolutely.
And so the technology is aiding that. I mean, I have kids that are working on the same document together. I have five kids on the same document who are editing and working and revising and thinking. And those are really exciting things to have.
It's just a new world. That's fascinating to see.
Yeah. I
really appreciate seeing that and some of the newest improvements, if you will, in education. Virtual reality, I'm going to be curious to see how that can, or quite frankly, can't be implemented. It's exciting, but can you really make it tangible and as a learning tool?
Right, and I'll be excited to be hopefully on the front lines of that and supporting it as a board member as well.
So you have a 6-year term.
Correct.
How far are you into that term right now?
I've finished my first year.
First year.
Yes.
So 5 years.
5 years to go.
And getting an opportunity to collaborate with other board members. How many board members?
We're a board of five.
Board of five.
Yes.
Okay. And are those allocated per a particular area in Spokane?
No, Spokane actually is unique among lots of areas in that we have all five are at large positions.
Okay.
So we serve the entire community, all five of us.
Is Central Valley School District similar to that in their board?
I believe Central Valley's board is districted.
Okay.
So they come from different parts of the Spokane Valley.
Well, what else do you see kind of as a in the classroom and or with the board as is something you'd like to see move forward?
Well, I mean, I think from the board standpoint, the more we can embrace accessibility and visibility in our community, I think that's always a good thing. I'm really excited about trying to push the technology envelope here in our community. I think that we have got teachers doing great work with kids, but the more we can connect them with kids from all over, we're going to be better off. The other piece is I really like to see all of our schools working more with our community. We do some really great work, but there's a lot more to be had. I know you've had guests on here before talk about their grant work and things like that with our schools. And those are the kinds of opportunities, I think, that we can provide for kids who are on all different kinds of tracks.
Okay,
they don't have to necessarily be college-bound kids. We've got lots of apprentice opportunities and lots of organizations in our community that are ready to work and reach into our schools and help our kids.
Paul, I really like that concept, and you're right. We've had different folks on the show talking about how businesses and or individuals or nonprofit organizations within our community really do seem to be taking an interest in education, whether it be through grants, time, et cetera, of identifying the different tracks that these kids are on. And I think, again, this is something you didn't see in prior generations in education, but you really are seeing it now. Teachers like yourself educators like yourself and otherwise, that folks are really identifying that all of these kids have different skills. It doesn't mean that that they have to be a fill in the blank or they have to be this or that. That we're really identifying, I think, through the education process in a more systematic way, these opportunities that can really see these kids succeed. Right. It's exciting.
Yeah,
it's
totally exciting. Agree. And, you know, schools shouldn't be a cookie cutter, one size fits all.
No.
We should provide as many pathways to success as possible. Not all kids learn the same way.
Right.
Not all kids want the same path forward. Let's see what we can do about making sure that we have as many opportunities for them as possible.
Well, and why we'd ever think they were cookie cutter to begin with is interesting.
Right.
But we're coming from systems handed down to us for generations. But I think what's exciting is I think that really is on the table now, and educators like yourself are really changing that, you know, one classroom, one student at a time, and that's really exciting. Paul, I appreciate you coming on today on Let's Talk Spokane. I just really appreciate it, and I know you're not only active as a teacher, active on the Spokane Public School Board. We appreciate all of your efforts. I think if we could encourage many more people within our community to take such a bold lead in moving education forward, we'd be better for it. Thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure, and thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Paul.
All right.
Let's Talk Spokane is produced in Spokane, Washington by SpokaneTalksOnline.com, which is solely responsible for its content. Ask us a question, recommend a guest, and hear this program again online anytime at SpokaneTalksOnline.com. Thanks for listening.
Ponderosa Republican Women is a Spokane area club working to increase the effectiveness of women in the cause of good government through active political participation. Ponderosa hosts a luncheon on the second Thursday of each month at 11:30 at the Red Lion River Inn, 700 North Division in Spokane. Monthly luncheons offer a great way to meet like-minded individuals and become involved in local politics and grassroots efforts. Ponderosa Republican Women is known as the go-to group for state and local candidates, information on ballot issues, current affairs, and local happenings. For more information or to RSVP for a luncheon, email ponderosarw@comcast.net. Follow Ponderosa on Facebook and Twitter.
Hi, I'm Tom Sawyer from Tom Sawyer Country Coffee. October is our first anniversary in our new location at 608 North Maple, north side of Kendall Yards. I am personally roasting your favorite coffee every day. Thank you to all that have found us this year. Come on down and enjoy the holiday coffee and gift items. Caramel pecan is back, our pumpkin spice, and Viking double dark. Every day we are serving delicious, artfully crafted specialty coffee. You will love it. Remember, 608 North Maple Street, open Monday through Saturday.